Hello, my name is Dave Emery. This is Sod 2 of For the Record program number 513, Keep Following the Money, being recorded on June 5th of the year 2005. The title of the program is an allusion to Deep Throat from Watergate, the source whose identity was revealed last week. He told Woodward and Bernstein to follow the money, and the best way of unraveling the very complex events around September 11th is to do just that. And we have been following the money, the financial trail of September 11th, since the get-go. Unfortunately, large elements of officialdom have declined to do that. And the most inappropriately named so-called 911 quote truth unquote movement has declined to do that in its entirety and instead retreated into a world of dangerous proto-fascistic fantasy. We're going to be taking a look at the Muslim Brotherhood. That is an Islamic fascist organization, which is the largest Islamist group in the world. Al-Qaeda, the Hamas, the Afghan Mujahideen from the Afghan-Soviet War, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and other institutions, including the IIP, the largest Sunni political party in Iraq, are offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood. That began in 1928 and was allied with Nazi Germany in World War II. It then jumped, as we looked in For the Record 473, to the CIA at the end of World War II. We're going to take a look at an article from Newsweek and also MSNBC.com from November 24th of 2004. This is an article called The End of the Muslim Brotherhood? Subtitled, an Arabic newspaper is reporting that the fundamentalist group might disband, but its dissolution could make it harder for governments to act against financiers of terror. I would suggest not only will this possibly make it harder for governments to act against the financiers of terror, and they aren't doing the greatest damn job right now, but it also could very easily be something of a signal that elements at least of the Muslim Brotherhood may be going underground, rather like the Third Reich at the end of World War II. At the moment, however, the Muslim Brotherhood is poised to take advantage of the, quote, democracy, unquote, movement in certain Middle Eastern countries. Don't be too surprised if the Bush administration's push for, quote, democracy, unquote, a very strange phenomenon in the light of their open contempt for it in the United States. Don't be too surprised if this winds up bringing the Islamo-fascist Muslim Brotherhood to power in many Middle Eastern countries, and ultimately don't be too surprised if they hook up and wipe Israel off the face of the earth, thereby realizing one of the goals of the Third Reich in both its overground and underground phase, namely exterminating the Jews. Don't be too surprised if they play a significant hand in crippling or annihilating the United States at some point either, given the fact that we are in, given the fact that we are now in the age of weapons of mass destruction. This article reads in part, again, End of the Muslim Brotherhood, an Arabic newspaper is reporting that the fundamentalist group might disband, but its dissolution could make it harder for governments to act against financiers of terror. It's by Michael Isikoff and Mark Hosenball, November 24th, 2004, and this reads, on the face of it, a little-noticed report in a London-based Arabic-language newspaper last week seemed to signal a major victory in the Bush administration's international campaign to crack down on alleged financiers of Islamic terrorism. According to the November 11th edition of Al-Sharq al-Assat, the Muslim Brotherhood organization, an international fundamentalist movement that spawned many of the world's key Islamic extremist and terrorist groups, including Al-Qaeda, recently held a secret conference at which its leaders discussed whether to dissolve their organization in the wake of Washington's moves to crack down on some of its leading members and corporate organizations. But like other developments in what the administration calls the global war on terror, the alleged move by the Brotherhood to abolish itself may have less substance than meets the eye. Indeed, it may even mean that efforts by the U.S. and its allies to move against financiers of Islamic terror groups will become more difficult. U.S. intelligence and diplomatic sources point out that some Arab nations banned the Brotherhood years ago. Notable among those countries is Syria, where former President Hafez Assad's brutal crackdown against the Brotherhood in the early 1980s left thousands of militants dead. Instead of driving the Brotherhood out of business in Syria, however, the crackdown there forced some of its leading members into exile in countries like Germany, where Syrian Brotherhood expatriates ultimately helped to recruit to the cause of Islamic Jihad a group of Hamburg Polytechnic students who later became 9/11 hijackers. Other Brotherhood activists in Syria simply went underground for years, only to resurface later inside Syria with new organizational names under which the current Syrian government of the current Syrian president, Bashar Assad, son of Hafez, allows them to operate under the watchful eye of security agencies. Parenthetically, there was a whole lot more to the development of the Hamburg 9/11 cell than simply the Muslim Brotherhood. It was very much involved with that. But don't forget that Mohammed Atta, as we have seen in some of our conversations with Daniel Hopsicker and some of the excellent work he has done, including and especially Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 cover-up in Florida, the vehicle through which Mohammed Atta moved into Germany and apparently also into the United States was the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, named for the former head of the Bayer company of IG Farben. Whole lot more going on here than just Islamists. As I indicated in side one, you start examining al-Taqwa, you go, you follow tributaries leading in the direction of the Bush administration, the Republican ethnic outreach group, the Italian fascist milieu around the P2 Lodge, the royal family of Liechtenstein, just a whole lot more going on here than just Muslims. Continuing. U.S. government experts acknowledge that if the Brotherhood does dissolve itself, its local branches will probably just lie low for a while and then resurface under new names. The Brotherhood, founded in Egypt in 1928 as a religious and quasi-political counterweight to the corrupt and increasingly decadent royalist and colonial governments dominating the Islamic world, always has had two faces. One, a peaceful public proselytizing and social welfare-oriented wing, the other a clandestine paramilitary wing. The militant arm has engaged sporadically in violent campaigns to resist or overthrow what the Brotherhood regarded as corrupt local tyrannies like the Egyptian monarchy. So again, there supposedly is a move to have the Muslim Brotherhood, quote, dissolve, unquote, but it will probably lie low, and this would simply make it more difficult, again, for people to pursue, for investigators to pursue the various conduits for Islamic, the funding of Islamic terrorism. Right now, I would note that the more public political branch of the Muslim Brotherhood is anything but dissolved. It is very, very much overt. And I would doubt that the suspension of the Swiss investigation into Youssef Nada, whose attorney is a law partner of the Swiss Attorney General, their Swiss Justice Minister, I doubt that will do much to discourage the Muslim Brotherhood either. We're going to take a look, too, now at a very disturbing phenomenon, namely the advice from some members of the U.S. State Department and intelligence community grouped around the Bush administration that far from opposing the Muslim Brotherhood, we ought to work with it. This is a classic case of basically slitting one's throat. And it's a little bit like the attempts at appeasing Hitler before World War II, and it will lead, certainly, to, quote, peace in our time, as Neville Chamberlain stated it. Note again that powerful elements of the Muslim Brotherhood and Bank al-Taqwa milieu were associated with the Bush administration and the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, and specifically the Islamic Institute of Grover Norquist, and backed by Karl Rove, and featuring, among others, Talat Altman, a close business partner and political and personal associate of both George's Bush. We're going to review some information that we looked at in For the Record 502. This is from an article from the Washington Post called In Search of Friends Among the Foes, U.S. Hopes to Work with Diverse Group, unquote, by John Mintz and Douglas Farah. This is from the Washington Post of September 11th, 2004. You remember that old song, What a Difference a Day Makes? What a difference 3 years can make, Skipping down in the article, some federal agents worry that the Muslim Brotherhood has dangerous links to terrorism. Parenthetically, I can't understand why they would think that. Can you? Continuing, but some U.S. diplomats and intelligence officials believe its influence offers an opportunity for political engagement that could help isolate violent jihadists. Quote, it is the preeminent movement in the Muslim world, unquote, said Graham E. Fuller, a former CIA official specializing in the Middle East. It's something we can work with, unquote. Demonizing the Brotherhood would be foolhardy in the extreme, he warned, unquote. Again, peace in our time. There are indications, indeed, that this just might lead to the basic ascension of the Islamo-fascist Muslim Brotherhood around the Middle East as part of the so-called democratizing movement that the Bush administration is behind. I would note that the Brotherhood is sort of a Janus-faced institution. It maintains a charity-oriented and peaceful-seeming face in its political wing, and then its military wing is altogether violent indeed. It's actually a very smart Machiavellian way of proceeding. We're going to note the following. Now, in late May of this year, just a few days ago, as I speak on June 5th, the American forces in Iraq basically took into custody for a period of time a fellow named Abdul Hamid. Now, this basically is a fellow who is the head of the IIP, or one of the principal officials. It is the head of the IIP. The IIP is the Iraqi Islamic Party. It is Iraq's Muslim Brotherhood. It is the Iraqi branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. And after initially taking him into custody, they turned him loose. I would describe the executive operations of our policy in Iraq at this point as really, for all intents and purposes, insane, as far as I can tell. I don't even think there's really a cohesive policy. In Iraq, our man initially was a fellow named Ahmed Chalabi. And this was a fellow who certainly had a wonderful resume in order to qualify him, or a wonderful resume qualifying him as a vehicle for the realization of democracy and freedom and enlightenment in Iraq. He had embezzled something like $22 million from a bank in Lebanon. Well, that's certainly a very, very good professional resume for somebody that we want to be appointing as a point man for democracy and enlightenment and integrity. It later turned out, there are very credible reports, that he was a spy for Iran. And for a time he was taken into custody. Well, now, I haven't covered it on the show, but now Ahmed Chalabi is in charge of the Iraqi petroleum industry. Beyond belief in many ways. Very, very strange days indeed. But one of the more bizarre of the many bizarre developments taking place in Iraq, along with all the tragic and bloody events, was the fact that Mr. Abdul Hamid, the head of the Iraqi branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, was taken into custody and then turned loose, and they said, oh, well, just like the old character on Saturday Night Live, never mind. The following comes from the Jihad Watch website, which also in here is quoting both an article from the AP and an article from a pro-Islamist website, Islam Online. This is an AP. The following, again, this is on the Jihad Watch website. I will give the full URL. But this first article is an Associated Press article. It's called, it's a Dateline Baghdad, Iraq. It's Dateline May 30th of 2005. U.S. troops detained the head of Iraq's largest Sunni Muslim political party on Monday, according to party officials, police, and the man's wife. South of the capital, two suicide bombers attacked a crowd of policemen in Halah, killing 20 and wounding nearly 100. The arrests came on the second day of Operation Lightning, a massive Iraqi-led anti-insurgent offensive in Baghdad that Abdul Hamid's party opposes, believing security forces will trample on innocent people's rights. Abdul Hamid was taken from his home in the western Baghdad suburb of Qadra at about 6 a.m., along with his three sons and four guards, said Party Secretary General Ayad al-Samari. Al-Samari accused American soldiers of raiding Abdul Hamid's home and confiscating various items, including a computer. U.S. military officials could not immediately confirm the detentions. Iraqi officials were also reluctant to talk about the issue. Ultimately now, the arrest of Dr. Mohsen Abdul Hamid was reversed. And this is, again, very interesting. It remains to be seen what ultimately comes of this. Perhaps there was some intelligence on that computer, which could lead to some substantive gains against the Muslim Brotherhood's underground and violent element. But we're going to quote the following, again, from the Jihad Watch website. This is from a pro-Islamist website called Islam Online. And this is an IslamOnline.net article, datelined Baghdad, April 23rd. The Iraqi Islamic Party, IIP, will not adopt violence as an approach to resist the U.S. Anglo occupation of Iraq, the party's Secretary General Dr. Moshe Abdulhamid said Wednesday, April 23rd. Speaking to Islam Online, Abdulhamid rejected any kind of cooperation with an occupation-installed government. Quote, "It is abundantly clear that we reject the presence of the U.S. occupation in Iraq, but we will not use violence in resisting it," unquote, he said. "Armed confrontation is useless and we will resist the occupation peacefully." The party and other Iraqi religious and national factions are on board when it comes to this, no doubt, unquote. The parties in Iraq are a dime a dozen. Anybody can stroll five persons together and form a party, unquote, Abdulhamid said, referring to the anarchy and free-for-all looting that swept Iraq. Now, note here, note the origins of the IIP, which is Iraq's Iraq's Muslim Brotherhood. Note when it began and note who founded it. As, again, I've noted, the Muslim Brotherhood was formally allied with Nazi Germany and fascist Italy in World War II. It was very close to the aforementioned Grand Mufti. And then after World War II, it jumped first to British intelligence and then to the CIA in order to be used against the secular Soviet Union. Returning again to this article from Islam Online, but the IIP, Iraq's Muslim Brotherhood, is a time-honored party that dates back to 1944 when Imam Hassan al-Banna, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood in 1928, dispatched his close ally, Dr. Hussein Kamal Eddin. Quote, "But the then government did not allow us to name the party after the Muslim Brotherhood, and we instead established the Society of Islamic Brotherhood, which played a pivotal role in whipping up religious zeal in Iraq at that point in time," unquote, he added. I would note that, as we've looked at in numerous programs, in 1941, the Muslim Brotherhood and the Grand Mufti and Saddam Hussein's uncle, who was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, led a basically an Axis uprising in Iraq in an attempt to drive the British out of Iraq and allow the Axis armies under Rommel to hook up with the Nazi armies that were cutting south through the Caucasus, ultimately stalled at Stalingrad. But we've looked at that pro-Nazi uprising in many ways, in many broadcasts, I should say. Note that the IIP was begun by Hassan al-Banna, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, in Iraq in 1944. That was during World War II, ladies and gentlemen. So again, note how much of this history goes back to that period in time. One of the things that we're going to deal with now, too, is one of the things that took place after the diaspora of the Muslim Brotherhood. The secularly oriented Nasser regime in Egypt, like the secularly oriented regimes in both Iraq and Syria, both governed under the Ba'ath Party, they cracked down on the Muslim Brotherhood, and that led to something of a diaspora. The Brotherhood took root in many places, including and especially Europe, and in Europe, including and especially Germany. And indeed, using the more peaceful, civilized-sounding face of its organization. And again, the Muslim Brotherhood is a Janus-faced organization. One face, very peaceful and deeply engaged in charity, which truly benefit many of the people on the receiving end of that charity. The other face, in line with its fascist and Nazi heritage. Following article is from the Middle East Quarterly. It's authored by Lorenzo Vidino. It's from the Middle East Quarterly of winter of 2005. This article is headlined, The Muslim Brotherhood's Conquest of Europe. Something about the Muslim Brotherhood's diaspora and its settling in Europe, where it is growing and has quite a few sympathizers. And this is one of the things that underlay the eventual concretization of the cell that struck on September 11th. This article reads in part, since its founding in 1928, the Muslim Brotherhood, Hizb al-Ikhwan al-Muslimun, has profoundly influenced the political life of the Middle East. Its motto is telling, quote, Allah is our objective, the Prophet is our leader, the Quran is our law, jihad is our way. Dying in the way of Allah is our highest hope, unquote. That certainly sounds like democracy and peace to me, doesn't it to you? Continuing, while the Brotherhood's radical ideas have shaped the beliefs of generations of Islamists over the past two decades, it has lost some of its power and appeal in the Middle East, crushed by harsh repression from local regimes, and snubbed by the younger generations of Islamists who most often prefer more radical organizations. But the Middle East is only one part of the Muslim world. Europe has become an incubator for Islamist thought and political development. Since the early 1960s, Muslim Brotherhood members and sympathizers have moved to Europe and slowly but steadily established a wide and well-organized network of mosques, charities, and Islamic organizations. Unlike the larger Islamic community, the Muslim Brotherhood's ultimate goal may not be simply, quote, to help Muslims be the best citizens they can be, unquote, but rather to extend Islamic law throughout Europe and the United States. Four decades of teaching and cultivation have paid off. The student refugees who migrated from the Middle East 40 years ago and their descendants now lead organizations that represent the local communities in their engagement with Europe's political elite. Funded by generous contributors from the Persian Gulf, they preside over a centralized network that spans nearly every European country. These organizations represent themselves as mainstream, even as they continue to embrace the Brotherhood's radical views and maintain links to terrorists. With moderate rhetoric and well-spoken German, Dutch, and French, they have gained acceptance among European governments and media alike. Politicians across the political spectrum rush to engage them whenever an issue involving Muslims arises, or, more parochially, when they seek the vote of the burgeoning Muslim community. But, speaking Arabic or Turkish before their fellow Muslims, they drop their facade and embrace radicalism. While the representatives speak about interfaith dialogue and integration on television, their mosques preach hate and warn worshippers about the evils of Western society. While they publicly condemn the murder of commuters in Madrid and school children in Russia, they continue to raise money for Hamas and other terrorist organizations. Europeans, eager to create a dialogue with their increasingly disaffected Muslim minority, overlook this duplicity. The case is particularly visible in Germany, which retains a place of key importance in Europe, not only because of its location at the heart of Europe, but also because it played host to the first major wave of Muslim Brotherhood immigrants and is host to the best organized Brotherhood presence. The German government's reaction is also instructive, if only to show the dangers of accepting Muslim Brotherhood rhetoric at face value without looking at the broader scope of its activities. Next, the article talks about the Muslim Brotherhood situation in Germany as something of a paradigm for the operations of the diaspora. By the way, I would note that the Muslim Brotherhood is wielding increasingly profound influence among American Muslims as well, as we looked at in among other programs, For the Record Program 381. Continuing, the situation in Germany is particularly telling. More than anywhere else in Europe, the Muslim Brotherhood in Germany has gained significant power and political acceptance. Islamist organizations in other European countries now consciously follow the model pioneered by their German peers. During the 1950s and 1960s, thousands of Muslim students left the Middle East to study at German universities, drawn not only by the German institutions' technical reputations, but also by a desire to escape repressive regimes. Egyptian ruler Gamal Abdel Nasser's regime was especially vigorous in its attempts to root out the Islamist opposition. Beginning in 1954, several members of the Muslim Brotherhood fled Egypt to arrest escape or assassination. West Germany provided a welcome refuge. Bonn's motivations were not simply altruistic. As terrorism expert Khalid Duran explained in his studies on jihadism in Europe, the West German government had decided to cut diplomatic relations it recognized East Germany. When Egypt and Syria established diplomatic relations with the communist government, Bonn decided to welcome Syrian and Egyptian political refugees. Often, these dissidents were Islamists. Many members of the Muslim Brotherhood were already familiar with Germany. Several had cooperated with the Nazis before and during World War II. Some had even fought in the infamous Bosnian Hanjar division of the Schutzstaffel, or SS. By the way, that was revived. The 13th Waffen-SS was revived in Bosnia in the mid-1990s, as we've looked at in a number of programs. By the way, for the record, 455 is a compendium on the Muslim Brotherhood. For the record, 456 is a compendium on Nazi and fascist connections to September 11th. For the record, 454 is a compendium about the Bush administration's links to some of these same groups as well. Continuing, one of the Muslim Brotherhood's first pioneers in Germany was Saeed Ramadan, the personal secretary of Muslim Brotherhood founder Hassan al-Banna. Ramadan, an Egyptian who had led the Muslim Brotherhood's irregulars in Palestine in 1948, moved to Geneva in 1958 and attended law school in Cologne. In Germany, he founded what has become one of Germany's three main Muslim organizations, the Islamische Gemeinschaft Deutschland, or Islamic Society of Germany, IGD, over which he presided from 1958 to 1968. Ramadan also co-founded the Muslim World League, a well-funded organization that the Saudi establishment uses to spread its radical interpretation of Islam throughout the world. The U.S. government closely monitors the activities of the Muslim World League, which it accuses of financing terrorism. In March of 2002, a U.S. Treasury Department-led task force raided the group's Northern Virginia offices looking for documents tying the group to Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. In January of 2004, the Senate Finance Committee asked the Internal Revenue Service for its records on the Muslim World League, quote, as part of an investigation into possible links between non-governmental organizations and terrorist financing networks, unquote. This privileged relationship with the oil-rich kingdom granted Ramadan an influx of money, which he used to fund the powerful Islamic Center of Geneva and to bankroll several financial and religious activities. Hani Ramadan, Saeed's son, currently runs the Islamic Center. Among its other board members is Saeed's other son, Tariq Ramadan, who recently made headlines in the United States when the Department of Homeland Security revoked his visa to teach at Notre Dame University. Saeed Ramadan's case is not isolated. And I would note also that one of the things that we looked at in For the Record Program 381 was the fact that Saeed Ramadan was actively recruiting assassins in the United States, including an African-American who killed an official that had formerly served the Shah of Iran and was in exile here in the United States. This article is a very important one, has very good information about the Muslim Brotherhood. Its URL will be in the written description for this broadcast in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Spitfire carries all of the CDs and lectures, all the programs and lectures I've recorded over the years. www.spitfirelist.com also features the last several For the Record shows on both MP3 and real audio for download only. And again, the For the Record section features long article-length descriptions of the programs with text presented for fair use only. Links at the top of each description to a website that features Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, on both PDF and also one on HTML. There's a search function on the Spitfire website. Links to two websites by sister station WFMU, which feature the entire For the Record series, many of the programs available on streaming real audio and also MP3, the rest on real audio for download only, WFMU podcasting the For the Record shows. And also note that there is a page to click on the Spitfire website for those who would like to assist the work that I'm doing. And if you don't like what you see, you could assist. That there's no better way of doing that than to assist what I'm doing. Page to click on the Spitfire website to do just that. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 513. Keep following the money, recorded on June 5th of 2005. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.